When I think about the word partisan or partisanship, or perhaps the phrase partisan hack, I think about someone, I think about a mindset wherein your analysis, your position, your posture, your demeanor is determined entirely by whether or not your political party benefits or is harmed by whatever is under consideration. There is no good faith effort amongst a partisan hack to try to actually analyze a given topic or occurrence or piece of news on its merits. It's all about politics. It's all about, you know, putting down the other side and defending your side and lifting your side up. That's the nature of it. It's a disingenuous, bad faith approach to analyzing a given situation. With that in mind, let's consider what the left has in store for us next week. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. You can catch us streaming at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and on your iHeartRadio app. We're here 9 to 11 weeknights. Appreciate you tuning in. 651-989-5855 is the number to join us if you feel so inclined. Brad Omlin back in producing the show, taking your phone calls. How was the concert, by the way?
It was excellent. I recommend that you check out Greta Van Fleet now, because in a few albums, they're going to rule the world.
All right.
Like, they have 8 songs on their album. They did 2 covers, and they stretched it out an hour and a half. Like, their guitarist is amazing. Their lead singer is amazing. A lot of people compare them to Led Zeppelin because they sound similar.
Mm-hmm.
But Greta Van Fleet can stand in its own right as an amazing rock band. Like, even if Led Zeppelin had never existed, they would still be awesome. And, like, every band since Led Zeppelin is standing on the shoulder of giants. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So they're one of those bands that has an awesome throwback sound, and just the place was sold out. There was like 5,000-6,000 people, and it was a great time.
What was the venue?
The Armory.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've been really anxious to find an excuse to go check that out. I've been in there a couple times while it was under construction during my day job. And it just looked like it had the potential to be a really great venue.
Yeah. I mean, you're lucky because you're tall. So,
yeah,
if you were on the floor for a show, you'd be fine. I know that a lot of people I'm 6 feet tall, but some people who are my height were complaining that they couldn't see very well.
Because it's too flat?
Yeah, it's just a mass of humanity back from the stage. I was in a suite on the side, and the suites are awesome. They're maybe only like $30 more per ticket per person, and it's well worth it because you have space, you get a waitress, there's the bathrooms and the bar easy to get to. I mean, the bathrooms and the bar are easy to get to in the whole place, but you're guaranteed to see and be comfortable in the suites. And they're not that expensive.
I'll have to find an excuse to make my way over there just to see something, just to see the venue. But maybe it'll be something as good as what you experience. All right. So from Politico, grassroots groups on the left are planning a massive mobilization next week against President Donald Trump's Supreme Court nominee, pressing senators to oppose the pick as soon as it's announced. The campaign promises to replicate some of the headline-grabbing civil demonstration tactics that helped defeat the GOP's Obamacare repeal effort last year, sending protesters in state Senate offices starting on Monday after Trump taps his nominee for the high court. Its focus is outside Washington, part of an effort to ramp up local media and public attention on swing vote senators in the Supreme Court fight. Senators need to immediately feel the pressure to protect our rights and oppose Trump's extreme nominee, liberal groups state on their hashtag Save SCOTUS website, which was launched on Tuesday. Organizations behind the push include Indivisible, Move On, Demand Justice, NARAL, pro-choice America, People for the American Way, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The activist efforts will continue or will center on highlighting the record of Trump's nominee on Roe v. Wade and ongoing legal challenges to Obamacare, a strategy emphasizing abortion rights and health care that Senate Democrat leaders are also adopting in their push to derail the confirmation. Now, there's one interesting missing piece from all this that kind of seems to be a necessary prerequisite. And that's, who are we even talking about? How can you be making this case when you don't even know who he's nominated yet? Like, they've already got the website out there that says we need to protect our rights from Trump's extreme nominee, of whom we know precisely nothing. Right? Like, this is what I'm talking about when I talk about partisan hackery, partisanship. Like, this is everything. The negative connotation that comes along with that word, partisan, is manifest entirely through this example, where they don't care who he names. He could name Bugs Bunny. He could name Merrick Garland. In fact, that would be genius. He should name Merrick Garland. Oh, they wouldn't know what to do with themselves. They'd have a heart attack. But he could nominate anybody, and it wouldn't matter because they've already got their narrative machine in place, ready to go with their automatic talking points, no matter who it is, which tells you that it really has nothing to do with substance whatsoever. It's entirely about being against Trump and against Republicans and trying to whip up their base and try to whip up their activists and try to get things going for the midterm election. It's completely transparent. It's really gross and disingenuous, and it's yet another reason to join the walkaway movement if you haven't already. All right, from USA Today, of course, yesterday was the 4th of July. Hope you enjoyed yours. I know I did. We went out to Delano to check out the fireworks, which is the second year we've been out there, and it's an amazing show if you ever get the opportunity. But man, this year, like, Delano is not built for an event of more than, I'd say, I don't know, 200 people. Like, it's not a town that has a infrastructure that can handle high levels of traffic. And the place, like, last year it was crazy. This year it was ridiculous. Like, I'm surprised that they allow that many people to even come into the city, because it was nuts. Like, the line for the bathrooms was 50 people deep. You know, and the show itself, though, is definitely worth it. At any rate, from USA Today, happy 4th of July, or maybe not. The Democratic National Committee's annual 4th of July statement reflects its longstanding tensions with President Donald Trump. While hailing the nation's founding ideal of equality for all, DNC Chairman Tom Perez said in the statement, "We recognize that America's founding premise remains out of reach for too many families," adding that everywhere we look, our most fundamental values are under attack. Perez referred to problems surrounding low-paying jobs, health care, immigration, injustice to people of color and members of the LGBTQ community, a recent Supreme Court decision on public unions, and the retirement of Justice Anthony Kennedy. Thousands of children have been separated from their parents at our southern border, Perez said. At our highest court, workers' rights are being taken away. Voting rights are under assault. Muslim Americans are being discriminated against for their faith. And women's right to choose is under threat like never before. This is his happy 4th of July statement? What? Happy 4th of July. Here's a list of everything horrible with this country. Every complaint we have with the status quo. Like, what? They think this works. They think this is a good idea. This is the DNC chair, the top muckety muck of the muckety mucks within the Democratic Party, who has thoughtfully and with calculation decided that it's a good move, a strategically sound move, to release a statement commemorating the 4th of July with a laundry list of complaints about the United States of America. And again, this falls right in line with what we've been talking about, you know, this whole week as we've been dissecting this walk away movement and how it is indicative of, or how it points to, the culture of grievance that dominates the left, that
in their worldview, it's a negative, pessimistic, just like it is. It's I want to use the word swamp, but that metaphor has been taken, right? But it's similar to that in the sense that there's muck, and you feel like you're just having to crawl through it and kind of army crawl your way through the muck of their rhetoric, and you just feel dirty after you listen to it, like there's no hope for the future. And that's what their selling points are for the election in 2018. Good luck, guys. Not sure how that's going to work out for you.
Well, I mean, it's pretty par for the course in terms of what we've seen from Democrats lately, but it doesn't offer anything new either. Like, oh, great, yeah, we already knew that's what we're going to talk about.
Right.
Next.
Yeah, true that. All right, let's talk to Dan in St. Paul. Welcome to the program.
Way to go, guys. You know, you're absolutely right. There is no solutions among Democrats. There is no solutions. There's only complaining. And what can I get? What can I get from government? You know, it's not what can I contribute to society? What can I do to make a change? But did you say you were in Delano? Did you watch the Delano parade?
I didn't catch the parade. We only made it out there for the fireworks last night.
Oh, okay. Well, I did march in the parade, if I may say, with the Jeff Johnson campaign.
Oh, okay. Sure. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That was a workout. That's a long parade. And Jeff was running from side to side, and I'm following him.
Hot day, too.
Oxygen. And shaking hands with everybody he possibly could in dress shoes.
Yeah.
And then he ran... Then he walked the chant. We walked the Chanhassen parade. Did the same thing, and then he went to Stewartville. And I thought, wow. I mean, I don't know that any other candidate was there. In fact, I don't think any other candidate was there. I know Delano was kind of a red area.
Yeah. I didn't mean to change the very much so.
On you. Forgive
no,
me.
No.
I was just.
No, you know, we're gonna go ahead and just declare it a freelance Friday, seeing as how we're not gonna be here tomorrow. Going into the unofficial holiday weekend. I know, you know, I appreciate the call, Dan. I don't know about you guys, but, you know, me being out and about today with the day job, it seems as though there's not a lot of people working right now. It's like maybe half the number of people actually at their jobs right now, as there usually is. Lots of people out of town. And so, you know, for all intents and purposes, we're in the weekend at this point. So by all means, you want to steer the conversation in a different direction tonight, feel free to do so. Yeah, that's that. I have walked in a number of parades for candidates over the years, and it's no joke. I mean, some cities are more forgiving than others in terms of the length, but you know, it's definitely a workout, you know, for these middle-aged guys and gals to be running around trying to get their moments with people on the side of the road. And you definitely got to hand it to them that they're wearing out their shoe leather in that endeavor. When we come back, there is a new contender for president in 2020, and he's got an idea that is just, it's so dumb. It's such a dumb idea, but it's not at all out of place in the Democratic Party. You'll love it when you hear it. 651-989-5855, closing argument. My name is Walter Atson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Closing argument. My name's Walter Atson. 651-989-5855 is the number to join us if you feel so inclined. You can pipe in on whatever we happen to be talking about, or if you want to bring up something random, steer things in a different direction, we'll take those calls tonight. You know, we're both taking Friday off tomorrow. We're going to enjoy our unofficial holiday weekend. You got to pick one on either side of a Wednesday, 4th of July. And it seems like most people have picked this one. So hope you enjoy yourself if that's what you're engaged in with friends and family. Let's talk with Dan in East Bethel. Welcome to the program. Dan, how's it going? Dan? Well, apparently the military surveillance that he wanted to talk about has caught up with him.
They're on to him.
They got him.
He wanted to talk about some guy named Q who was reported that the military is surveilling presidents
Oh.
I don't know. I Googled it, and the first two sources are an obscure thread on Reddit, or an obscure subreddit, and an Alex Jones video. So I'm going to assume that it's not very credible.
This might be him. He might have had himself muted. We'll let Brad figure that out. In the meantime, there's this guy, an entrepreneur. This comes to us from CNBC, by the name of Andrew Yang. And he has a big goal for a relatively unknown business person to reach the White House. He's aiming to get there by selling America on the idea that all citizens age 18 to 64 should get a check for $1,000 every month. No strings attached from the U.S. government. Yang, who's 43 years old, was born in upstate New York in 1975 and will be running as a Democrat, according to his campaign website. On Reddit in April, he said, "People who think the antidote to Donald Trump is a boring generic Democrat miss the point. He is a sign of massive institutional failure on both sides. A universal basic income payment, which Yang calls the freedom dividend, is one of his major policies." Man, is there anything more Orwellian than that? calling a government redistribution of wealth a freedom dividend? We're going to take your money, funnel it through a bureaucracy, and hand it out to a bunch of people who didn't earn it. There's your freedom. Freedom dividend. The most direct and concrete way for the government to improve your life is to send you a check for $1,000 every month and let you spend it on whatever manner will benefit you the most, Yang writes on his campaign website. Without irony. That sounds like satire. That sounds like The Onion. Somebody saying that the most direct and concrete way for the government to improve your life is to just send you a check. This guy sounds like a parody of a leftist, like a caricature of a Democrat. But no, he's right in line with where a lot of them feel. He says the government has plenty of resources. They're just not being distributed to enough people right now, he says. Now, the question I would have for this guy, Andrew Yang, is what are you talking about? The government has a lot of resources. What resources does the government have? Because by my count, the government has precisely zero resources. They have none. Zero.
They're about negative $14 trillion in resources.
Yeah, if you want to look at it from a certain point of view, that's absolutely correct. They're definitely in the red. But my point is that even in the best of circumstances, government has nothing at all. It can only, in order for it to do anything, it first has to take from somebody else. You know, notwithstanding a hypothetical Ayn Randian laissez-faire, you know, voluntary contribution system, which has never existed. Notwithstanding the possibility of that, for government to act, it must first take money from people who actually earned it, who actually own it. So this notion that the government has all these resources from which it can dole out $1,000 checks to everyone is pretty bizarre to me.
Actually, you can still give extra money on your taxes to the government. Nobody ever does.
Right. Well, and yeah, that's one of the you bring up taxes. That's one of the things that occurred to me as I was reading this earlier. Which is, you know, you go down and he continues to expound upon his argument for this. He says it's impossible to overstate the positive impact of a $1,000 a month on households around the country. It would take people from a constant mindset of scarcity to a mindset of assured survival and possibility. It would transform our society in myriad positive ways by taking the boot off people's throats. Now, if that's true, then why not just enact tax cuts in such a way that every single taxpayer will have an extra $1,000 at the end of the year, or an extra $12,000 at the end of the year, because there's your $1,000 a month, right? Like, do that. Why does it have to be funneled through government? Why can't you just step aside and let people earn that extra $1,000? Sounds like a better plan to me. All right, the phones are lit up with random topics, which I very much appreciate. Let's go back to Dan in East Bethel, see if he's with us this time.
Hi, can you hear me this time?
I can.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I was just curious. A friend of mine just recently told me about an individual that's referred to as Q that supposedly is revealing information that supposedly the military has been keeping tabs on the last administration, and that there's all this information that's going to come out. Have you heard anything about this?
No, only what you're saying. I haven't heard anything about it whatsoever.
Okay, thank you.
All right. There we go. I will be sure to consult with Q and get my laser watch and my exploding pen and my debrief dossier on military surveillance of the past administration. I think we can squeeze in Brandon in North St. Paul. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, guys. God bless America. I just want to say you couldn't do that with the taxes. Nancy Pelosi would have an aneurysm. It's just too common sense. But wanted to indicate that I know a lot of older Democrats that are being alienated by their own party. That's why I think Trump's going to win the next election. They're seeing everything that they've ever worked for just been given away. And they have nothing to show for all the work that they've done. But they see their own party saying, oh, let's give everybody everything, you know.
Look, I think there's something to that. I appreciate the call, Brandon. I think you see that reflected in the growing rural-urban divide here in Minnesota and across the nation, where, you know, folks who are working class and who make their living, particularly here in Minnesota, the Iron Range, make their living in ways that are objected to by hippy-dippy progressives in the city who have high-minded ideas about how things ought to be in places where they don't live and where the consequences don't affect them. Yeah, that's something that Democrats at the leadership level have failed to keep in check and keep in line, to keep people in their lanes, so to speak. And those chickens are coming home to roost. We'll talk to Dan in St. Paul when we return. Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson. Catch us streaming at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and on your iHeartRadio app. We're here 9 to 11 weeknights. Catch up on past shows by doing a search for Closing Argument in your iHeartRadio app. Our channel will pop right up. Doing a little Freelance Friday action, even though it is a Thursday. We won't be here tomorrow live. There'll be a best of. So if you want to steer the conversation, whatever random direction you choose, feel free to give us a call, 651-989-5855. Brent Ullman taking those calls, producing the show. Let's talk to Dan in St. Paul. Welcome to the program. Thanks for holding.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. You know, Walter, I didn't have an opportunity or privilege to talk to you about this before, but it keeps wearing on me, and that is to help the black community, to help people in inner cities, to help people who want to get a great college degree. There is absolutely no reason for a few hundred dollars one should be able to get a degree online. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds really cheap, but when you think about the power that online or webinars or Skype, et cetera, but with think tanks like maybe Dr. Thomas Sowell and Dr. Ben Carson, you know, lend some credibility, I mean, and yourself, and just say, how can we do this? Because, you know, in Hopkins, where I live, you can get a community center room for like $15 a night. And, you know, I'm just thinking, being creative, because to go to college, like at the University of Minnesota, and spend $20,000 a year commuting to the U,
yeah,
to get an undergraduate degree, think of all the great degrees you could really learn. All this stuff's not new information. This stuff's been around for, you know, in medicine and in pre-engineering, all that stuff. You can buy books at Goodwill. I mean, and if the free market, and you mentioned this before, if the free market could get an accredited degree and one of these topics and one of these many of these subjects online, how cheap could we do it? You know,
well,
and I think it can be done.
The underlying logic of your premise is sound. The problem is there's a huge cultural barrier to overcome, because right now, people still think of a college degree as something that's earned in that traditional way. And anything less than that would be perceived, in my opinion, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I don't have my finger on the pulse of where society's at, but it'd be perceived as something less than, something not as worthwhile. And so, you know, that message, I think
competence, that your competence, it wasn't the class just to get the grade and
right.
everything else you learned.
But that's just it, is that the idea of a competence-based, merit-based economy is something that needs to be, we need to get from where we're at to there in the culture in order to facilitate that, and but we're
if
not.
If you could make the argument, which would be very easy to do, that it's a net negative, it's a loss. The public universities, private universities, mm-hmm. grants of scholarships, the taxpayer-funded baloney,
yeah.
the Marxist indoctrination, all of this stuff, the binge drinking.
Yeah.
There's
no question.
It's a corrupting place
for
a lot of 18-year-old kids.
There's no question. Look, I think the first step towards that, I don't know that, you know, you go out and you rent the room for $15 a night as step one. I think step one is taking... And when we talked about this before, I brought up Mike Rowe as an example, and I know he's more of a tech school guy, but I think what he's trying to do in terms of engaging the culture in order to undermine and call into question a lot of the dominant ideas about what post-secondary education looks like and whether or not it's even necessary for most people and what have you, I think that's the type of effort where what you're talking about needs to start, where you do the kind of research. I mean, you know, you talk about a think tank. We need to have the research that demonstrates what you're saying. And I think a lot of it probably is out there.
You can learn calculus to the highest level on YouTube, free.
Sure. Right. But the question becomes, how do I know you learned it? Right. And that's the thing is that there isn't, we don't have in corporations, you know, we still have this system of hiring that I think is absolutely and utterly completely ridiculous. The resume way of hiring people, where everybody submits their online resume, you know, 500 people submit their name for a job and a computer decides who's going to get interviewed, you know, and it's absolutely nuts, as opposed to having a relationship-based system of the way it used to be, where you'd walk into a place and talk to a guy who actually makes a decision, you know. And to me, that's the superior way of engaging in human resources, because you're actually, there's so much more to a business relationship than just the competency of a particular skill set. Right. It has to do with your personality, the way you fit in with the culture of the whatever the place of business is. You know, your social skills and what have you. And that's not something that you can put on a piece of paper and have it come across.
But, you know, if you could, sorry to take so much time.
No,
that's fine. But if you could demonstrate and you had activities, out of class, extracurricular activities, et cetera, that proved or showed your socialization abilities, your communication skills, et cetera, really crafted to really not only to train, but for people to say, this is my craft, this is only for serious students, this isn't for people that are looking for somebody to take tests for them. You know, all those things I find to be something can be done very inexpensively if somebody has the passion. If you don't have the passion, then, you know, something else is for you. But all of the qualities, for example, to become a doctor, it is such a huge waste of money for the taxpayer and for the families and students to have a random four-year degree so you can get into medical school. What's the point? There is no point. It's kind of a religious sect, the higher education system, that's wasting millions, if not billions of dollars across the country and then putting these kids into debt. I know a guy that graduated with an exercise science degree and he owes $80,000. To do what?
Work at
a health club?
That's right. Yeah, there's a lot of people around that
ridiculous.
Type of boat. Yeah. I appreciate the call, Dan.
Maybe you can be a part of that think tank.
Hey, you know, if they raise the money and they're willing to throw some my way, I'll be part of anything they got going on.
All right, buddy.
All right.
Take care. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are huge problems with education, but I think that it's like so many of the policy problems that we have in our society. It's like a tangled ball of yarn. And the question is, what thread do you pull on in order to start actually untangling it? And I don't know that the first place to pull the thread is on, you know, how we demonstrate our competencies and what have you. And, you know, part of the reason why, like, one of the big obstacles to what Dan's talking about is just anti-discrimination law. So much of how human resources is set up and how people hire and the process that you have to go through in order to even be considered for a job, so much of it is liability control. It's CYA. It's trying to keep you from being sued for discriminating against potential employees. And so that's a large part of why it's become such a faceless, distant, cold, analytical process where your chances of actually getting in front of somebody and talking to them have decreased over the decades. Because if they started there, which is the way it used to be, if you started with somebody walks in and you talk to them and you make a value judgment about their potential as an employee and you pick them over somebody else, well, then if the next person who comes in says, hey, you didn't hire me because I was black, or you didn't hire me because I was a woman, or you didn't hire me because, you know, I'm from Guatemala, or whatever the case may be, then they're going to be able to bring a case against you, you know, take you to federal court or whatever the case may be, and end your business potentially. And so perhaps the thread to start pulling on is tort reform. You know, perhaps the thread to start pulling on is the massive behemoth that is anti-discrimination law, you know, whereby a huge, ridiculous percentage of what companies spend their time doing is avoiding lawsuits, which, you know, that's not business. That's not the business of doing business, having to cover yourself, having to protect yourself from being sued over something stupid. When you have the freedom of association, if we just recognized and appreciated and valued and affirmed people's freedom of association and recognized that whatever their reason for making a decision, it's their decision to make when it comes to their relationships, when it comes to who they hire and why. If we had that as a principle in our jurisprudence, then perhaps we would find ourselves in a position where you could market test a lot of these alternative ideas to the current monolith of education in this country. 651-989-5855. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Well, geez, I thought we were going to talk about Q again. We had a caller on the line. Wanted to go back to this supposed high-level government person who calls himself Q, which strikes me as highly unoriginal.
Apparently, it's short for, like, QAnon.
Yeah. I started to gather that as I went down the rabbit hole of Googling it. And, okay, whatever. Like, it's... Look, we'll talk about it. You want to call in and talk about the conspiracy theories developing around, you know, military surveillance? I have nothing better to do.
It is a rabbit hole to an underground bunker filled with tinfoil hats.
Yeah. So by all means, let's chat about it.
I think that the military intelligence people got to him again.
Well, that's the thing. They keep calling and then they keep getting yanked off the line. I mean, there must be something afoot, right? I mean, and, you know, we say that in jest, but truthfully, these conspiracy theories are constructed upon exactly that type of assumption. Like, something happens, you assume an intent behind it, and then you have a hypothesis as to what happened and why, and then you take that completely manufactured hypothesis and use it as a foundation for coming up with another part of the theory.
If you're looking for Jesus in your toast, you're going to find him.
You know what I'm saying? Which is, yeah. Look, it's fun. I in my younger years, I used to watch the movies. I miss Alex Jones when, like, the old Alex Jones. You know, I was just on InfoWars, which is the first time, because I was trying to look up this stuff, because we had the caller. And it's the first time I've intentionally gone to InfoWars in possibly years. And it's way different than it used to be. It used to be a much cleaner website. You know, now it's much more clickbaity and you know, tries to look like every other website. But I miss the old school Alex Jones, who, like, every 3 to 6 months, like clockwork, he would come up with a new documentary. And it was like 4 or 5 hours worth of just him running around, barging into people's offices. He was kind of like a right-wing Michael Moore, you know, like him running around, getting in the face of, you know, a Rothschild or whatever on the streets of New York and asking him about the New World Order and, you know, why he's trying to kill the children and put fluoride in the water and this, that. That was highly entertaining.
He was like a right-wing Kool-Aid man.
I miss those days. Now he's, you know, all dressed up and trying to have a bona fide media empire and what have you. But hey, whatever. More power to him. All right. So, from the Star Tribune, Fox News Channel analyst Brett Hume has deleted a 4th of July tweet that suggested Democrats sure don't love America. Hume had referred to a Gallup poll that said 47% of Americans said they were extremely proud to be Americans, the lowest percentage in the 18 years that the polling company has been asking that question. Among Democrats, 32% of poll respondents said this. In his since-deleted tweet, Hume had linked to an article about the poll in a conservative blog that was titled, "Why Do Democrats Hate America?" "Hate may be too strong a word, but they sure don't love it," Hume wrote. Hume later wrote that some people thought that wasn't a fair conclusion from the poll. "I agree, and thus the deletion," he said. A former ABC News correspondent, Hume anchored Fox's evening newscast before retiring to an analyst's role. Now, here's a question that I want to sincerely consider. Why is it offensive to Democrats to be thought of as hating America? Because literally, it seems as though, and correct me if I'm wrong, lefties, 651-989-5855, it seems as though you do. Like, it seems as though everything about this country you don't like. You don't like the system. You don't like the institutions. You don't like the history. You don't like the fundamental structure of the Constitution. You don't like federalism. You don't like any of the founding fathers because they were white. They were slave owners. You know, they oppressed everyone. We just had DNC chair Tom Perez put out a 4th of July statement that was a laundry list of all the things he hates about this country. That was his 4th of July statement. "Hey guys, happy 4th of July. Doesn't the nation suck?" Like, that's his statement. Paraphrased, of course. But that's basically what it was. So you tell me, how is this an unfair statement from Brett Hume? Why did he have to delete this? Why is this offensive to you? Like, look, you could take it for, you can approach it from the other direction if you want. You call in and you tell me what you love about America. We'll take that approach. What do you love about this country? Because it seems to me, it seems pretty clear that everything that makes America, America, you know, look, you can claim, well, I love it because it's my home. Like, I love the land. I love, you know, it's like people saying they love Minnesota because of the lakes and because of the summers and because of the Mall of America or whatever it is you love. Like, the loving the place, just the fact of the place, is one thing. But when we talk about loving America, America is an idea. America is more than just a place. America is a culture. It's a set of values. And fundamentally, it's about liberty. It's about autonomy of the individual. It's about individual rights, freedom. That's what America is. And when you analyze the Democrats' platform, they obviously hate that, right? Like, clearly, they hate individualism. Clearly, they hate individual rights. They have no desire. They don't have any desire to preserve property rights or to preserve your right to life. Look, what's the one thing they're most animated about right now? The ability of mothers to kill their own children. So they don't like life. They certainly don't like liberty. they're annoyed by anybody who's successfully pursuing happiness. Again, DNC chair, Tom Perez pointing out how much he hates the country on the 4th of July. You tell me, what is it about this country that you like? I don't understand why Brett Hume deleted this. He should have doubled down. He should have pulled a Trump here and just doubled down and dared people to come at him and prove him wrong. But, I guess you can't expect that from everybody. Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson, 651-989-5855. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Disapprove of Trump's handling of immigration. That's the headline over at Politico. So, my immediate response to this is disapprove how, right? Because this is kind of like when, during the healthcare debate back when Barack Obama was in during his first term, they would come out with these polls talking about how, the country was for or against whatever was going on, Obama's handling of healthcare. And that doesn't tell you anything. If they're against it, they could be against it because they think it ought to go one way, and other people could be against it because they think it ought to go the other. And that's not indicated in this poll. Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Catch us streaming at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and your iHeartRadio app. We're here 9 to 11 weeknights. 651-989-5855 is the number to join us. We're doing a little freelance action. It's not Friday, but we're not going to be here tomorrow, so we're treating it like a Friday. You can take the show in any direction you see fit. Brent Ullman takes those calls and produces the show. Hopefully you won't get snatched by your military surveillance shadows that are chasing you. We've had a couple of those tonight. Of folks who just weren't able to make it on the air because they were being pursued. And apparently were apprehended. More than half of American voters surveyed by Quinnipiac University for a recent poll said they disapprove of the way President Donald Trump has handled immigration. Just 39% of those polled said they approve of Trump's handling of immigration, while 58% said they disapprove. But 50% of respondents said they believe the motive behind the president's immigration policies is a sincere interest in controlling our borders. So, again, what does this actually mean, right? Like, the 58% who disapprove, it could be either because they think he's not doing enough. They want to see him build the wall quicker. They're upset because it hasn't happened yet. Or they could be people who want to, abolish ICE. You just don't know. Continuing on Politico, similarly, 47% of those polled said they do not believe the president is racist, compared with 49% who said he is. Now, that's almost like exactly an overlap of the partisan breakdown of where people identify. 44% of respondents said the motive for his immigration policies is racist beliefs. Trump's administration policies or immigration policies have drawn significant scrutiny in recent weeks, thanks to the administration's move to refer all illegal border crossers for prosecution, and then they go into, reviewing that whole drama about the separation of kids at the border. Another relatively useless poll. I don't know what to make of this, and I don't think the people who issued it know what to make of it either. But they do like the headline of trying to make it sound like people are against Trump and that everybody thinks Trump is racist. All right, let's talk to Dan in Minneapolis.
Walter. Hi, I've been listening to you probably since you started your show more than a year ago, something like that.
Yeah, appreciate that.
Okay, so I don't know how this happened to me, but somebody tipped me off to this QAnon message board, which is as sketchy as you can possibly get, but bear me out here.
Okay, go ahead.
It purports to be a person who goes by the denomination Q, which has something to do with high security clearance in certain parts of the government and the military,
mm-hmm.
who is speaking on behalf of someone who's sort of like reverse leaking stuff that NSA collected ever since has been collecting, especially on the transition of power from the last administration to the current one, like all the kind of the stuff that they kind of throw at them. Anyways, this purports to be like kind of like a he's dropping crumbs, like he's leaving clues. Like, he doesn't say such and such. He says, you know, like, what'll happen to the he'll ask questions like bringing up the Hillary Clinton, their Clinton Fund or whatever it's called.
The Clinton Foundation.
Yes, that. And he'll ask questions about, he won't like explicitly say they're doing this, but he'll say, what were they doing in Haiti? And who's this person? And why did she donate money to the friend of this person who's married to the board of the directors of this? And it's kind of like inside baseball, and it's seductive. It's probably fictional, but why I called is over the last couple of weeks since there was a Trump rally in Duluth 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
On this subreddit called Great Awakening, this whole people following this as it's true, and I'm entertaining it myself in the same light, they're starting to see stuff like in the background of the crowds and stuff where people are purposely holding up Q signs and stuff to connect that with thing. And there's an internal narrative on this board in this community, if you will, that Trump is kind of winking and nodding at them and like making a, you know, pointing out the guy with the Q shirt to confirm that there's like he's that the Q people are on his team, and it's a fight against the deep state and the big media, and it gets wild and crazy, and it has a lot of disinformation, and but it honestly has some of the more interesting inside baseball, what's happening in the Department of Justice with Ron Rosenstein and the Investigator General Huber. Have you ever heard of this guy named Huber, who is supposedly assigned whatever, last November of 2017, he was charted. I can't explain it because it's so esoteric and boring, but apparently there's a guy named Huber who's a prosecuting attorney from Utah who was given the go-ahead or whatever to go after people who had been deeply corrupt in the last administration, not just in the White House, but in the Republican.
So why haven't we heard anything about this?
Because it's so ridiculous. Because it's so ridiculous and unbelievable, and it's a conspiracy theory that they kind of.
Since when is a prosecution, a government prosecution, a conspiracy? Like, why would that be secret?
Oh, because according to the premise of this board, it's sort of like according to this, that there's been 40,000 sealed indictments over the last 6 months or since November, that are supposedly like a RICO-style roping up a bunch of corrupt politicians, and not just the politicians, but the people who are in the what you call the deep state, the part of the government that's not elected.
Those types of proceedings aren't secret. You can't start putting out indictments of people and it not be public domain knowledge. I mean, we're not operating under a military tribunal domestically.
Apparently. What about sealed indictments is what I'm saying.
I don't know what a field indictment is.
Sealed.
Oh, sealed.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. That means an indictment where they go before a grand jury and they say we have right to they don't actually prosecute you, but they get a sealed indictment that says that they have a grand jury has approved that you have a reasonable case to make if you were to prosecute it.
Okay,
I'm not a lawyer.
As quickly as you can, what is this all? What's the point of all this, the Huber and the sealed indictments and all this jazz?
The point is that there's like a counter-narrative that because you haven't heard it, like I said, at this point, I don't know how to back out of the conversation. I'm not trying to sell it as truth. I'm just telling you that it's a phenomenon on the internet. And there's a lot of real data that is, I don't know, there's a lot of crap on the internet, but this is some of the more interesting stuff out there. And because it's toxically not approved by our masters, by the editors, by the groupthink and the,
I don't know. Because it's an alternative. People are attracted to it because, you know, I get it.
Okay.
I appreciate the call, Dan. There's a lot of crap on the internet. That's my takeaway from the call.
If this is true, like, what's the point? Why would we be worrying about past Obama officials?
Why would you need to do that secretly? right? I mean, there's an open, ongoing special prosecution or special counsel, to be accurate, investigating supposed Russian collusion between the current administration and when it was a campaign and the Russians. Why would that be out in the open? Because that, I mean, the implications of that are huge, right? Like, if the allegations were true, why would that be out in the open, but we're going to keep secret all of this administration is going to keep secret Trump. If there's one thing we know about Donald Trump, is that the dude doesn't know how to keep a secret, right? Like, this was one of the big complaints of Israel, who's one of our allies that actually likes Trump. You know, because he was out there tweeting, like, operational details of what they were doing against ISIS. He's tweeting it, and they're like, dude, can you scale it back just a little bit? Right? So that's one of the many reasons why I don't buy into conspiracy theories.
Well, and he campaigned on putting Hillary Clinton in jail.
Right.
So if he was indicting all these Obama officials, he would be parading them in the street in handcuffs.
Absolutely. It would be the biggest production. Plus, there's nothing to gain or lose by doing it secretly. So I don't understand. Maybe there's some piece of this that I'm missing. All right, let's go to Mike in Farmington, who is thankfully taking us in a different direction. How are you doing tonight?
Thanks for taking my call, Walter.
Yeah.
Just a couple of things. I believe you started off the program. There was some gentleman that is running for political office. He believes that everyone should get $1,000.
Yeah, universal basic income.
And I'm just absolutely mystified how it seems like these people have no problem selling a group of people into slavery. In other words, they're going to take someone's labor,
mm-hmm.
work for that.
Mm-hmm.
They have no compunction whatsoever just to snatch that money,
right.
Give it to somebody. I mean, are people that daft?
Yes. The answer to your question is yes, they are. They are that daft.
I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And then you had quoted these polls, but most of the people I think that listen to this show realize that most of the media to me is it's a propaganda machine. This poll they referred that people don't like how Trump is handling the immigration system. You know, I would like to get a sense of if you've seen what's been happening in some of these school districts where teachers are just out and out resigning. The classroom has become, it's basically a battleground. And there's a real good video of a award-winning teacher who goes before the school board and just says, you know what, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. It's too violent. It's too crazy. And what I'm tying this together with is how many people do we bring in and we can't even handle the situation that we have now, and so we're going to bring in more people and make it worse and increase classroom size more. So all of this costs money. How do these do-gooders, or bleeding hearts, if you will, how are you going to pay for this?
They don't worry about that. They don't worry about it.
Well, they better, because it's going to impact them and their quality of life.
Yeah, but they don't believe that. Listen, here's the deal, Mike. And I'm being a little coy with you. I'm playing devil's advocate because, you know, I share your frustration, right? Like, because the perspective that you and I come at these types of questions from is rooted in this thing we like to call reality, where things actually follow established rules and there are basic premises which dictate how life actually works. And you have to be mindful of that in order to successfully negotiate your day to day. But the folks that we're dealing with, up to and including those who aspire to lead us, federal, state, and local, they live in a world of complete and utter fantasy, where one need not worry about how to pay for something because we're just going to take it from those who have it. You know, that's the thing, is their view of how the economy works starts from a completely different premise. To their mind, There's this set amount of money that's just out there in the ether that just exists. And the rich people and the powerful people went out there and scooped it up, right? Like they went out there with giant vacuum cleaners and just sucked it all up and are hoarding this fixed pool of pre-existent money that was just out there in the wilderness to be found. And they're keeping it from the rest of us. And so by that worldview, the solution is to club them over the head and take their hordes of money that they're clinging to and redistribute it to the folks who weren't fast enough to get out there with their vacuum cleaners and suck it up.
Now, and let's speculate just a little bit here, because I've heard that some of the more traditional Democrats are really upset because they feel that their party's been hijacked. And I wonder if we see these midterms come and the Democrats get just pounded again, if there's going to be a come to Jesus moment.
No. I mean, there will. The walk away movement is a come to Jesus moment. But the problem is that the core group, the hard left people who are, you know, whether they're grassroots or they're in, or they're Tom Perez, DNC chairperson, the hard left folks are not going to let go. Revolutionaries, I mean, think about this. Think historically about, you know, the communists, the socialists, you know, the Che Guevaras, the Stalins, the Lenins. Was there ever a point at which any of them were like, gee, this isn't working out, we better try something different? No, they're true believers. They're insane. They have chosen their path. They have been enveloped by the dark side, and they're going to take it all the way. The only way that we're going to beat them is to quite literally beat them, to defeat them, to take them out of power and remove them from civilized society. That's the only way we're going to be able to do it. We're not going to get them to a point where they realize, oh, gee, we're wrong.
I read John, I don't know if you know who John Nolte is. He wrote a piece on just the absolute incivility that's being put forward by, you know, the, you know, the Michael Moore, but the media is giving a soapbox to basically, in my view, to incite violence. And it's like, how much longer before something really goes bad here?
Well, I don't think it's going to be that much longer. I think, like you say, if we see the midterms go bad for the Democrats, I think the next step is actual in-the-street violence. I mean, we've already seen it on a small scale, but in perhaps an unprecedented way. Appreciate the call as always, Mike. We'll talk to Anthony in St. Paul when we return and take your calls at 651-989-5855, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, closing argument. My name is Walter Atzen. 651-989-5855, the number to join us this evening. Brad Omlin taking those calls and producing the show. Let's talk to Anthony in St. Paul. Thanks for holding.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for taking my call. It's been quite a few months since I've called in. And one thing I noticed about your show, Walter, which I love, by the way, you don't really show any emotion one way or the other. Like, I don't see a whole lot of enthusiasm in terms of the these midterms. So I would like to volunteer my enthusiastic services.
Now go right ahead.
I wholeheartedly believe that the left is so divisive towards itself that they're not going to have any chance. I'm talking there's going to be in between 10 and 15 seats that jump red. There's no way in hell that there would be any less than that. I mean, right, they're turning on Hollywood right now. Are you aware of this right now? They're turning on Scarlett Johansson for playing a trans woman in a movie or a trans...
Oh, yeah. I haven't heard that story, but I have no doubt that you're absolutely correct.
It's all over Twitter. Yeah. They're turning on the people that are making the movies. They're... pretty much, even though what's his name from Black Panther was obviously inferior to Thanos, they made him the villain of the year,
right?
Strictly for his race, which is kind of crappy. But the thing is, there's no unification. As angry and hateful as they are, and they may be unified in their mission to stop Trump and stop anything that's related to common sense, they have nothing they agree on besides things that they hate. So this guy that's running for the universal income, Mark Zuckerberg already beat him to that. Mark Zuckerberg's talking about running against Trump, too, and talking about a universal basic income. It's just not going to work. And that's probably the only thing that they could get behind. What are your thoughts on the 2018 midterms?
Well, I mean, I don't look, I'm not really good at electoral prognostication, but I do not see the blue wave at all. I don't see it. I don't see the any. I mean, you talk about enthusiasm. There's anger, sure, but you know, anger is not enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is something that coalesces around a message. And like you say, they don't have one. All they have is how pissed off they've been since the day Donald Trump defeated Hillary Clinton, and they've just allowed it to fester for, you know, all this time, and haven't done anything productive with it other than hoot and holler and scream and yell. And like you say, they're turning on their own. They're cannibalizing their own. They're, you know, people who have considered themselves part of their cause. They're saying, well, you're not good enough because you're not taking it to this extra level of, you know, the seventh circle of hell where we're standing. You haven't followed us there, so you must be some kind of a traitor. And it's
not left enough.
Yeah, it's exclusionary. Ever heard of what?
Blair White.
Blair White. No.
Blair White is a transgender, identifies as a she, a transgender conservative that frequently has podcast chats with right wingers. She did a really good one with Ben Shapiro.
Oh, okay.
And she's very right wing, and she went to L.A. and I think somebody like physically assaulted her. And it's just kind of funny. Like
a leftist assault, I'm assuming.
Yeah. You get kicked out of the Pride Parade.
Right.
If you're a conservative,
right.
Or if you're
right.
a trans
right.
conservative,
yep.
because you know you're not
because it's not about being gay. It's like with me and the black thing. It's not about being black. It's not about being gay. It's not about being anything other than a leftist. That's what it's about. Your identity is hijacked. Your identity as a minority is hijacked and redefined to mean being a leftist, which is of course not at all what it is, right? Like, and it's incredibly insidious and audacious and beyond the pale to try to dictate to me that because of my demographic characteristics, I must be predetermined to think certain thoughts. Who the hell are you? And that's where these people are coming from, and it's backfiring on them.
Joe Rogan had a really funny line where he was talking about he was somewhere in L.A. after Trump won, and there was a guy chanting anti-Trump chants. And then he says a black guy walked right in front of him, and as soon as he saw the black guy, he started yelling "Black Lives Matter."
Like he's just gonna automatically be like, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, Walter. I'm just gonna leave you with this. Thank you for taking my call and listening to me rant here. And I wholeheartedly believe what I said about these 2018 midterms. It's gonna be, as I said on Justice and Drew, it's gonna be a red landslide.
All right. Well, hey, look, I won't complain. Appreciate the call as always, Anthony. Thanks for calling. 651-989-5855. We'll talk to Barry in St. Paul when we return. TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. All right. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 1035 FM. Streaming on TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and your iHeartRadio app. 651-989-5855, the number to join us. Brad Omlin taking those calls, producing the show. Let's talk to Barry in St. Paul. Thanks for holding.
Hey, thanks. So you guys were talking about education.
Yep.
And I think the way to solve the education problem is to make universities prove that they have value. And how you do that is you get rid of the rules about how the government puts its fingers in, how you have to pay it back, how you can't get rid of it with bankruptcy or anything, right?
Right.
And then you also take them out of the whole lending money to people and giving Pell Grants, because then you make them prove that your money that you're giving these institutions is actually worth something.
Correct.
Or you make them prove to lenders that these people that they're lending money to are going to have value in the future.
Correct.
So they're okay lending.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely correct. In other words, restore the market, right?
Yeah. But the problem with that is politically, that's almost impossible because how many people you'll piss off by doing that.
Well, I mean, you're right. But when I talked, I believe it was to Dan earlier about this, the point that I was trying to get after with him was that we have to start with the culture. And so I think whatever the effort is, it begins with trying to wake people up to the fact that what your prescribed solution is rooted in the premise that there's something wrong with the status quo. And I think for a lot of people, they're not quite cognizant of what is wrong, right? Like they don't perceive a Pell Grant as something that is doing damage. They don't perceive the lack of the ability to declare bankruptcy as a problem that is actually, you know, putting a thumb on the scale of market valuations and contributing to the piss poor nature of post-secondary education. And so a lot of work needs to be done in terms of conveying that sense. And I don't know exactly where to start, but you're on to the right track.
Well, in 10 years, just like when we had the housing crisis, in 10 years, there'll be 50 million, 100 million, 150 million, maybe even as many as 200 million people that still have $60,000, $80,000 in loans that they still can't pay back.
Right.
And they'll be getting to the age where they start getting into politics. And then when they're seriously into politics and have committees, assignments and stuff, and that's when it will start changing.
But
I wanted to talk about something else, if that's okay.
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
I think the biggest thing we can do, at least in Minnesota, is start talking not just about reform of the prison system, but to start talking about helping the kids that are finding themselves in the juvenile justice system and why they find themselves there and the social services and how it's failing these kids that need this help. But nobody wants to talk about it, and nobody really can talk about it because the way the privacy laws are written. Because how do you talk about something that's happening to a kid that you can't say is happening to a kid?
Yeah, no, I take your point. The thing is that the privacy concern is a legitimate concern, so I don't know how you get around that.
Well, it is, but if we don't fix it, so I've been around it, okay, and I see most of these kids, all they need is somebody to actually care about them.
Well, sure,
Not just when they're in the system,
right,
but when they get out of the system. And that's all it would take, but we don't have people that do. We don't have a system that has a lot of foster parents that do. Most of them, well, I can't say most of them, but enough of them to make it a problem, only want the money, right? And then when you overwork these social workers in, like, Hennepin County and stuff like that, how do they have the time to find these people?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I do.
I think that's the problem. And if we don't start addressing that problem, especially in Hennepin and Ramsey counties, then how do we help these kids that we could help, that we could make productive members of society, that we could solve the problem before they even become criminals and find themselves down roads that they can't walk away from?
I appreciate the call, Barry. I appreciate the thoughts. It's definitely good food for thought. And what it raises in my mind is what we've talked about every once in a while here on the program, which is the need for, I hate to use the phrase criminal justice reform, because that's a phrase that comes with certain pre-programmed connotations and concepts that pop up in people's minds. You know, I'm not really thinking about reform in terms of, you know, tweaking sentences here and there, or even something as sweeping as ending the drug war, although I certainly believe that needs to happen. I'm talking about reform, like starting with a cultural reform, of how we think about justice itself. Because right now, currently, our justice system really, truthfully, has little to nothing to do with the concept of justice. It really doesn't. justice isn't about taking people who have committed crimes and giving them a permanent or quasi-permanent second-class status, sewing a scarlet letter on their garment and treating them as less than for the rest of their lives. And that's part of the problem, a foundational, fundamental part of the problem, is that we have a system that is designed to create an underclass of people that we think of as inherently criminal, rather than dealing with people as individuals and recognizing that when somebody commits an injustice against another person, the proper response is to undo that injustice, to rebalance the scales, to have recompense paid, to put the wrong right. And with the objective being, once the wrong has been put right, everybody goes about their business as if nothing happened, right? Like that's the point. If somebody steals from you, they pay you back plus some for your trouble, and then you go along your merry way. You know, this is the biblical sense of justice, going back to the Mosaic Law, the way things were done, which was both more lenient and more severe. It was more lenient in the sense of, if you caused harm to another human being, you were called upon merely to set it right, to pay them back, you know, two times as much or seven times as much, depending upon the circumstances, in order to rebalance the scales. And then both of you are restored and reintegrated back into the roles you had previously. Or more severe in the sense of, certain crimes called for the death penalty. You know, if you killed somebody, or if through negligence you caused somebody's death, you were put to death. That was the crime. And, you know, they had a different process for determining guilt as well. You know, you had to have multiple witnesses. And so this prompted, you know, when it comes to things like rape, like sexual crimes, one of the vulnerabilities in the way we do things today is that you have this scenario where the crime under consideration wasn't witnessed by anybody except for the person who's making the accusation and the person who's the alleged perpetrator. What do you do with that? Well, biblically, the solution was, you have to have a witness, right? Like, a crime, in order for somebody to be convicted of a crime, there had to be two witnesses. Now, the circumstance that require, or the situation that fosters, is you don't want to find yourself in a situation where there are no witnesses to a potential crime, because if it happens, you're not going to be able to prove that it happened, and the person isn't going to be punished for what they did. So that prompts this thing called prudence, actually paying attention to where you are at and who you are with and what the circumstances are, and being a little bit more cognizant, being a little bit more forward thinking and intelligent about the situations that you find yourself in. That's a good thing. That's something that ought to be fostered and was fostered under that Mosaic way of doing things. And so anyway, I went down quite a rabbit hole here, but what we need to get to is a foundational view of justice that's actually built around the concept of putting things right and then moving forward, rather than classifying people as criminals and then treating them as such until the day they die. 651-989-5855 for a reaction to that. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Former California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, one of President Trump's highest profile environmental critics on Twitter, called the resignation of EPA Director Scott Pruitt Thursday a fantastic development. One, he said, now rids Washington of a man who wrongly challenged California's leadership on tough auto emission standards and who had no interest whatsoever to protect the people on environmental protection. You know, this is in line with a lot of comments that folks have been making. There's been this victory lap that's been taking place with the news of Scott Pruitt's resignation. There's only one problem. You guys didn't win anything here. Like, he didn't resign because he's like, yeah, you guys are right, I quit. You know what I'm saying? Like, he didn't resign as a concession to your ideas about the environment. And Donald Trump isn't going to be like, you know what? Now, you know who we're going to put in there now? Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know who we're going to do, what we're going to do now? We're going to put in, I don't know, Bill Nye the Science Guy to be the EPA director. Like, you guys have not won this battle. This was it. The reason he left was completely unrelated to the business of the EPA. It had to do with his personal corruption. It's a scandal, right? Like, to sit here and portray this as, oh, this is some great victory for progressivism. This is some great victory for environmentalism. No, it's not. You've won precisely nothing. And this is the type of stupidity. It happens on both sides, right? Like, during Obama's reign, his two terms, you had the birther thing, right? And various other focuses on Obama as a person, his personality. The objective was, oh, if we could only get to the point where Obama's out, we'll have somehow won. Well, no, you wouldn't have. Because guess who would get to be president if Obama was out, right? It's not going to be a Republican. It's not like, oh, yeah, we impeached Obama, so now we get to have Ted Cruz. No, that's not how it works. And it's the same principle in application here. Yeah, Scott Pruitt's out. Congratulations, lefties. The guy who they got in there now, and Schwarzenegger even speaks to this, is Andrew Wheeler, who was the second in command, is going to be the acting director now. Schwarzenegger goes off to talk about how he's the wrong guy to protect America's health and environment. Well, too damn bad, because you don't get to say anything about it, because Donald Trump is still the president. The sun still came up this morning, and Donald Trump was still in the Oval Office. So I don't understand the celebration on this, other than just grasping at straws to have anything whatsoever to feel good about. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, 651-989-5855. So a caller had brought to our attention the fact that Scarlett Johansson is coming under attack by virtue of the fact that she has apparently been cast to play a transgender woman. I'm not entirely clear on how this language works. I'm guessing transgender woman means a man who's trying to be a woman.
Correct.
Okay. So it's Scarlett Johansson playing a transgender, although this says transgender man in the copy here at New York Times, so maybe they don't even understand how this language is supposed to work. But at any rate, it's her playing a transgender. That's the point. And what's going on here is she's coming under attack from transgender actors who are claiming that she's stealing their role. Because, I don't know, this may be new to you, but apparently acting means that you just do what you actually are. Like if I was going to be an actor, I would play a half black, half white talk radio host who lives in Minnesota, who's, you know, 39 years old, because I'd be really good at playing that role.
No
as
one
it
was
turns out.
No one was mad when Neil Patrick Harris stole my role in How I Met Your Mother.
Nice. I like it. I like it very much. Yeah, I mean, it's called acting, folks. Like, the whole point is you pretend to be somebody that you're not, right? And the ones who get the rewards, or the awards, the ones who get the recognition, are the ones who do the best job of pretending to be something that they very clearly are not, right? That's where you get the most accolades. Yeah, Tom Hanks playing Forrest Gump, right? Charlize Theron playing a psychopathic, I never saw a monster, but, you know, she got ugly. And everybody applauded her for that. Oh, she's so brave. A beautiful woman making herself ugly. You know? It's amazing how low the bar is in Hollywood for bravery.
No one complained when Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal played gay cowboys.
Well, they would today.
Sure.
They absolutely would today. And that's part of the point. Like, apparently, one of the responses from the agency that represents Scarlett Johansson was... They tweeted out, or they issued a statement that said, tell them, referencing the people who are complaining, tell them that their complaints can be directed to Jeffrey Tambor, Jared Leto, and Felicity Huffman's reps for comment, each of whom have played transgender characters recently, right? Like very, very recently. Jared Leto won an Oscar for the 2013 movie Dallas Buyers Club. Felicity Huffman was a transgender woman in the 2005 film Trans America. And of course, Tambor was playing in Transparent on the Amazon network. So, I mean, this is an invented controversy. And here's the interesting thing. Like, this is coming to us from the New York Times. By the way, the film in question, I can't believe I'm about to say this on the air. The newly announced film, Rub and Tug, is based on the real-life story of Dante Tex Gill, who ran a string of massage parlors that were fronts for prostitution dens in the 1970s and 80s. The online backlash was led by transgender actors who argued that such casting decisions take opportunities away from members of marginalized communities. A transgender actress, or I don't even know how to refer to this person, called Trace Lissette, said, I wouldn't be as upset if I was getting in the same rooms as Jennifer Lawrence and Scarlett for cisgender roles. In other words, you know, roles that aren't transgender. Which, why would you cast a transgender? But we know that's not the case. I'm developing mental blocks here, trying to wrap my mind around this. Listen, Lissette, or whatever your name is, Tracy, we'll call you Trace. That's gender neutral, right? That's a virtue in your worldview, being gender neutral. So, Trace, here's the thing. Scarlett Johansson is getting this role not because she's cisgendered, but because she's Scarlett frickin' Johansson. And I know what that means, and you know what that means, and she's a household name. She's in the Avengers, right? Like, that's why she's getting the role. Because her name is recognized, she's an established talent, you are not.
Well, it's the same reason why Starbucks got all the attention for kicking two black people out, because they're at the top of the game.
That's right.
It's Tall Poppy.
Yeah, if it was Bob's Coffee in some, you know, dingy corner of Philadelphia, it wouldn't have been a story. Yeah, that's exactly correct. So, you know, this whole concept of roles being owned by the people group that are being portrayed, I don't understand this logic at all. Like, there's some sort of, it's like there's this communal ownership. Like, am I owed residuals? Like, should I be getting paid for, like, The Color Purple? Should I be getting a cut of that all these years later? Should I be getting some sort of residuals from Blackish? That's running because, you know, do I own that on account of the fact that I was born with a certain skin color? You need to understand to me how the logic of this works, because I do not get it. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. 9 to 11 weeknights here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Enjoy your 4th of July pseudo weekend. TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com.